This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
People have this in mind and they worry that the result may not be accepted by one or the other camp, and that might lead to further violence in the country.
That's Bagasi Kuda, managing editor with VOA's Front to Africa service, on concerns that violence could reignite in the Guinea presidential election. Details coming up. Also, Ethiopia's president says the massive Ethiopian dam project will start generating power this year. And according to the UN, funding for humanitarian operations in Africa's Sahel region has practically dried up. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. On Sunday, voters in Guinea will choose the country's next president. There have been months of political tensions and at times violence among supporters for the two main candidates. For an overview of the election, VOA's Kate Pound Dawson spoke with our colleague, Bagasi Kuda, the managing editor with VOA's French to Africa service.
The main candidates are the incumbent, Alpha Condé. He's 82 years old. He has been elected for the first time in 2010 and re-elected in 2015. So he's running again for a third time after changing the constitution, because his argument is that he has unfinished business. He has some development work going on that he need to stay and finish. And he's facing Selou Dalein Diallo. He's an opposition candidate, the main opposition candidate, a 68-year-old. The two candidates have faced each other two times already, in 2010 and 2015. So this Sunday will be the third time that they are facing each other at a presidential election. The supporters have been facing each other for weeks now, and this has amounted to clashes between supporters of the president and Selou Dalein Diallo. And recently, the UN was worried that the two candidates and their supporters were using ethnic term to mobilize voters.
What are some of the big issues in this election? What are the two candidates calling for?
Guinea is one of the richest countries in Africa in terms of natural resources, but the country lacks basic services. They don't have running water in part of the capital, Conakry. So you can imagine the rest of the country. The country doesn't have enough roads. So even during this campaign, to reach some of the remote places, it's very challenging. And also, youth unemployment is very high in Guinea. So these are some of the issues that the two candidates will have to deal with once they are re-elected.
Now, are there concerns about the actual voting day process? Worries about perhaps violence or voter intimidation, efforts to block the internet and social media, or more, you mentioned the issue of ethnic clashes, you know, more ethnic tensions.
Yes, because, since last year, since October, when the president announced that he was going to change the constitution and run for a third term, there has been clashes, and dozens of people have been killed during those clashes. And during the referendum in March, there has been violence. Dozens of people have been killed, not only in the capital, but also throughout the country. So people have this in mind, and they worry that the result may not be accepted by one or the other camp, and that might lead to further violence in the country. And the UN recently was worried that candidates, mainly President Alpha Conde, who during a rally called his supporter to not vote for other ethnic candidates and UN and other international organizations, so that as a way of bringing ethnic tension, ethnic division into a campaign. So these are the things people are worried about, because it's not clear if the opposition will accept another loss, or if incumbent, if he loses, he will quietly relinquish power and move on.
That was Bagasi Kura with VOA's French to Africa service, speaking with my colleague Kate Bondawson. As Ivory Coast's president prepares to campaign for another term in office, his main challengers have called for a boycott of the October 31st election, adding to widespread doubts about a fair and transparent vote. Stacey Knott reports from Accra, Ghana.
President Alassane Ouattara's two main challengers, Henri Konan-Bédier and Pascal Effiong-Goussen, said Thursday they would boycott the vote and invited their supporters across the West African nation to do the same. The opposition candidates want the ruling party to agree to meet with all political forces to discuss their concerns about the election. They argue that Ouattara's running for a third term is illegal. They have also been calling for the Constitutional Council, which validated his candidacy, dissolved, along with the Independent Electoral Commission, believing these institutions flawed. There were originally 44 presidential candidates, but only four were accepted by the Constitutional Council. Thursday's news could mean Ivory Coast's election will be a two-man race, the incumbent Ouattara and independent candidate Kwadio Konan-Bertin. A spokesperson for the Ivorian Observatory for Human Rights said this election was meant to give the country a chance to show its democratic and political maturity compared to past electoral violence. But, it said, with the ongoing issues, this would not be a fair or transparent election and could lead to serious consequences. The organisation has called for the election to be postponed and restarted to include all political actors. Tommaso Capriolo in Ivory Coast on a joint election observation mission with the Carter Centre in collaboration with the Electoral Institute for Sustainable Democracy in Africa said that after the opposition leader's announcement, it was unclear as to how the election will proceed. Capriolo said it was crucial the different parties resolve their issues before people go to the polls.
We think the dialogue, honestly, is the really the only framework through which it appears possible to find a mutual solution. Because at the end, the goal for everyone is to have an inclusive, transparent, and peaceful election here in Ivory Coast.
Amnesty International's Samira Haddad said there had been growing threats against activists and opposition members leading up to the election. She fears this might lead to instability in the upcoming weeks.
The authorities have targeted and arrested scores of activists and opposition members these last weeks solely for expressing their political views or organizing peaceful protests, so there is a risk, of course, to see more people arrested and consequently a growing discontent among the opposition.
While local and international human rights and democracy organisations watch the campaign with trepidation, incumbent Ouattara told the United Nations General Assembly in September the election would be peaceful and transparent as it was in 2015.
Cette élection intervient dans un environnement démocratique.
Ouattara said the election will take place in a democratic environment that has been strengthened by major reforms. He also spoke of the economic and human progress made by Ivory Coast. At the heart of the election controversy is presidential term limits. A new constitution approved in 2016 limits presidents to 2 5-year terms. Ouattara earlier said he would step down at the end of his second term this year, but after his chosen successor died unexpectedly, he said he would run for a third term. He insists that his first two terms do not count towards term limits because the current constitution was not in force at that time. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
Ethiopia's president told parliament that the massive Nile Dam project will start generating power this year with two turbines. Experts estimate that 13 billion cubic meters of water will be held through them, raising the amount there to 18 billion cubic meters without coordination with Egypt and Sudan. Congress member Karen Bass, chair of the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa, introduced a resolution encouraging continued negotiations on the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam to reach an equitable outcome fair to all parties. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, about the impact of Ethiopia's unilateral decision on the already troubled negotiations.
Well, in practical terms, the decision by the Ethiopians to proceed does have little effect in that, you know, water levels in the Nile are at record highs this year. In fact, the Blue Nile has the highest levels of fillage in the past century. And in fact, this is causing high levels of flooding in parts of East Africa, especially in Sudan. The Aswan High Dam in Egypt is also at a record high here over the past 40 years at 182 meters above sea level. So from a practical standpoint, the decision doesn't have a negative impact. And ironically, you know, so much of the negotiations have been focused on how quickly the dam should be filled up because Egypt and Sudan didn't want the filling of the dam to harm the downwater flows from the river. And so with the heavy rainfall this year, it's going to lessen that pressure. And given that that we're looking at a period of 4 to 7 years for filling the dam, in some ways, this year is making the process easier. Now, on a political level, the Ethiopian decision and action is problematic because it is increasing anxieties within Egypt and Sudan. It is as if you have three business partners starting a new joint venture, and one of the partners is proceeding with implementation before they finalize the plan. So I think Egypt and Sudan want to be clear on some of the outstanding issues at the outset before things get too far along. And I think that's where the tension comes from the latest Ethiopian announcement.
Congressmember Karen Bass, chair of the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa, introduced a resolution encouraging continued negotiations on GERD. The resolution said, "A mutually acceptable agreement is critical for future regional stability and economic growth." Bass called for supporting the African Union-led negotiations among the three sides to reach an equitable outcome fair to all parties. Would such a resolution help to push for a breakthrough in the GERD negotiations?
Well, I think balanced statements like this that are emphasizing the importance of coming to a resolution through negotiation in a way that's mutually beneficial for all actors are very helpful. And they are reinforcing the message that international actors want the negotiations to be constructive. And it is also helping, I think, provide assurances to all sides in the negotiations that the international community is watching and expects a fair outcome from the deliberations. I think the statement is also emphasizing that African Union is the right forum for these discussions. They have been hosting the negotiations for a while, and they continue to be best suited. By not taking sides, the message also reinforces that these negotiations are ultimately about technical issues, you know, about how quickly to fill up the dam, how water will be allocated in times of drought, means of resolving disputes, and those need to be settled by the parties themselves. The problem becomes more complicated when international actors intervene on the side of one party or the other. In that process, the negotiations become more politicized, and it actually makes it more difficult to reach a technical compromise.
Former Egyptian Minister of Water Resources and Irrigation Nasser Alam suggested that Egypt should demand an official reprimand from the African Union to Ethiopia on the recent statement, and urging Addis Ababa to adhere to the announced negotiation schedule to conclude with a binding agreement on the rules of filling and operating the dam. Is that doable? And if so, would it pressure Ethiopia?
I think from a political standpoint, Egypt is wanting to bring Ethiopia back to the negotiating table. However, by publicly calling for reprimand, it's likely to cause Ethiopia to become more resistant and to harden its position. So I think the way forward is for Egypt and Ethiopia to be talking directly, through the AU negotiations, and strengthening their relationship is going to be key, since this agreement isn't just for 1 year. This is a long-term partnership that they are forming. And so they need to be, all sides need to be strengthening the trust and confidence that they have in this agreement, because they'll be working together for some time to come.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. The United Nations warns that funding for humanitarian operations in Africa's Central Sahel region has practically dried up, putting the lives and well-being of millions of people at great risk. It says the consequences could be disastrous if international donors fail to support next week's high-level pledging conference. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN agencies are operating on a shoestring in the Sahel region. The United Nations reports they will need $2.4 billion through the coming year to provide life-saving assistance to more than 13 million people, over half of them children, in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. The UN Children's Fund reports multiple crises in the Central Sahel, including a surge in armed violence. The economic fallout from COVID-19 is worsening conditions for children. UNICEF spokeswoman Marixi Mercado says more than 1 million children have been forcibly displaced from their homes. She says the number of children suffering life-threatening malnutrition is increasing, as are mortality rates in some regions of Burkina Faso.
Across the three countries, targeted attacks had already shut down over 4,000 schools before COVID-19 closed down the rest. Verified instances of grave violations against children, which include recruitment into the fighting and rape and sexual violence, have risen, especially in Mali.
Mercado says UNICEF has received less than a third of the $210 million it needs to provide life-saving therapeutic food, immunization against deadly diseases, and other critical aid for millions of children this year. The World Food Program reports it is running a serious funding shortfall of $178 million, putting its humanitarian operation at risk and jeopardizing efforts to save lives. WFP spokesman Thompson Feary says the Central Sahel is facing a serious food and nutrition crisis. He adds, in parts of northern Burkina Faso, some people are on the verge of a hunger catastrophe.
This region is on a tipping point. We could see an irreversible slide into chaos, with the risk of a spillover of instability into border areas of neighboring countries around the Gulf of Guinea. This could precipitate further deterioration in food security in West Africa.
The United Nations reports humanitarian needs in the Central Sahel are rising faster than funding can keep up. UN officials say they fear the impoverished, conflict-ridden region could develop into one of the biggest crises in the world without support. On the other hand, they say timely and generous aid could tap into the enormous potential the Sahel has to offer and help turn things around for the better. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Cameroon says the United Nations reported this week calling for the release of the country's main opposition leader, Maurice Kamto, is one-sided, subjective, and distorted. The UN report accuses Cameroon of stifling the opposition. Cameroon's government says its recent arrest of nearly 300 people at a protest was justified because they were calling for the overthrow of President Paul Biya. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaounde.
Government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi says a UN report on the legal proceedings against opposition leader Maurice Kamto and his Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party supporters is false. Sadi says the arrest of the CRM supporters last month was in accordance with Cameroonian laws and international conventions to which Cameroon has freely subscribed.
Contrary to allegations, the fellow citizens arrested were not subjected to any inhumane, degrading treatment whatsoever. In addition, the march planned by Mr. Maurice Kamto was in no way a peaceful march. In an audio post, the spokesperson of Mr. Kamto solemnly announced the organization of popular marches captioned Cameroon Revolution, Paul Biya must go.
Sadi said most of civilians arrested remain in custody and will face charges that include insurrection, hostility against the state, and group rebellion against state authority. Kamto was not arrested, but police have not allowed him to leave his home since September 22. In its report, the working groups on arbitrary detention and enforced or voluntary disappearances of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights demanded that authorities release Kamto and his supporters. It also demanded that Cameroon's government stop intimidating political activists, investigate all alleged human rights violations, including accusations of enforced disappearances, arbitrary detention, and ill treatment of protesters, and bring perpetrators to justice. Christopher Ndong, Secretary General of and legal advisor to Kamto's CRM party, says more than 400 supporters were arrested, with at least 200 still in jails all over Cameroon. Ndong says Kamto has been denied his freedom.
The situation has not changed. The compound of Maurice Kamto is under heavy military presence, and Kamto is crying out aloud to the international community to make sure they should tell Mr. Biya not to continue this act of barbarism on his citizens, but to listen, dialogue, and of course, to make sure the electoral system is changed. That is all we're asking.
Kamto called for the September 22 protests to pressure Biya to stop November 6 regional elections. He says the electoral code favors Biya, who the opposition blames for the separatist conflict in Cameroon's western regions. Godwill Ambe, a 26-year-old Kamto supporter, says authorities should free all those who have been arrested and solve issues the opposition leader has raised to avoid potential conflicts between civilians and the military.
The more they keep him in the house, the more they provoke the supporters. And also, as you can see, Cameroon is like an active volcano. Anything can happen at any time. And majority of Kamto's supporters are youth who are ready to do anything at any time because they are disgruntled.
Kamto has faced periodic harassment since accusing Biya of stealing the 2018 presidential election. Police detained Kamto and 200 of his supporters in January 2019 for protesting the election results. After international outcry, Biya pardoned Kamto last November and had him released. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaounde, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Iyabaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.